live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University. It is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. I'm looking in the mirror. But I look good. I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
And once again, not L. Martin, Zachary Sysicki joining you on the airwaves here on WKAR's Current Sports, 107.1 FM, AM 870. Again, you can call in and join the show throughout this hour of Current Sports, 517-355-9527, 517-355-WKAR. Zachary Sysicki again, joined by Jack Kerwin in studio. How are you doing?
Not too bad, man. Not too bad. Last day in East Lansing for about a week. So
yeah, you got a nice long break. And again, frozen tundra while Al is enjoying the sunny rays of Florida. We have Alec Rio behind the glass. We're going to have Kyle Turk in studio, WDBM, another WDBM employee. Talk about MSU football again. D'Antonio just talked, ran over from his morning presser here to be able to join you now. We're going to try to get up some of that opening remarks he had today into the airwaves before, again, we break it down tomorrow, as well as some more basketball talk. But as we always do, we'll jump into the quick hit headliners. And we're going to kick it off with some football talk. Kerryon Johnson has officially been diagnosed with a knee sprain. Again, he went out on Sunday. It's being reported as a knee sprain. He is getting an MRI, but it does look like it'll be week to week going forward. His status is up in the air for this Thursday, the Thanksgiving game against the Bears, and that is all being reported by Adam Schefter. Kerryon Johnson has led the Lions, the 4-6 Lions, that is, below 500. But is leading the team in rushing, 641 yards on the ground and 3 touchdowns. He's been one of the bright spots, one of the few bright picks so far of the Bob Quinn era. And additional injury news with Jamal Agnew, TJ Lang now officially on the IR as well. Marvin Jones is listed as doubtful. Bruce Ellington, the new wide receiver. Damon Harrison, the new defensive tackle. Darius Slay, Ziggy Ansah, Michael Roberts, and A'shaun Robinson are all listed as questionable as of yesterday's practice. So again, if we get more news on that, we will bring it to you. Lions take on the Bears, again, this Thursday, Thanksgiving, both on a short week. And it, again, as breaking news as we can get, Adam Schefter reporting Mitchell Trubisky, the Bears are optimistic he will play Thursday after facing the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday night.
Did he get hurt at the end of that game?
He got a little banged up. He was getting hit a little bit.
Yeah, he sure was. All right, well, speaking of football, asked directly Monday if he would guarantee a Michigan win over Ohio State, Wolverine senior captain Karan Higdon said he had no problem doing exactly that. Yeah, I do. I do, Higdon said to reporters. That's how I feel. I believe firmly in my brothers, this team, and this coaching staff. As a captain, I'll take that stand. Why not? Zach, very reminiscent of Jim Harbaugh's guarantee against Ohio State.
That's what everyone's saying. That's what everyone's saying. It's going to be interesting. Again, Kyle will be in. Kyle Turk from WDBM to preview that matchup just a little bit as well. Amazon now, they're thought of as a tech company, but they're trying to expand their business as they've gone into TV and music and books. They now have a bid, according to CNBC, for all 22 regional sports TV networks that Disney has acquired from 21st Century Fox, and that includes the YES Network out of New York, obviously known for their Yankees coverage. That's going to be interesting to follow going forward as Fox just acquired them this past year. And in similar news, making it a little bit more local, still no news, no updates out of Fox Sports Detroit and who will be in the booth calling Tigers baseball. And again, FSD, I'm right here. If you need someone, come this spring.
That'd be a hell of a jump for you. I'd be rooting for you, though. I think you'd do a great job, Zach.
I appreciate it.
Michigan State head women's basketball coach Susie Merchant has been named the recipient of the 2018 Athena Leadership Award, as announced by the Lansing Regional Chamber of Commerce on Monday. The Athena Award honors individuals who strive towards the highest levels of professional accomplishment, who excel in their chosen field, have devoted time and energy to their community, and who have paved paths for other women to follow. So good to see that recognition for Coach Merchant.
Yeah, she's been kind of all over the boards as far as leadership awards and sportsmanship awards. One of the best people around this MSU campus. Moving to the diamond, the big leagues here, Adrian Beltre, again, growing up playing baseball, is a player that you kind of idolize. After 21 years in Major League Baseball, the longtime Texas Ranger has announced his retirement from baseball, quote, "After careful consideration and many sleepless nights, I have made the decision to retire from what I've been doing my whole life, which is playing baseball, the game I love." 39 years old, I still thought he had a little bit left in him, but he finishes with an average of .286, 477 home runs, over 1,700 RBIs, includes 4 All-Star appearances, 5 Gold Gloves, 4 Silver Sluggers. Really one of the all-timers as far as our generation goes.
One of the most underrated players you'll ever see. Like, he didn't get the name recognition that a David Ortiz, you know, got, certainly, but no. Did everything right his entire
career.
Good
locker room guy as well.
Absolutely. I don't know if you saw this game last night. I'd hope you did. Rams-Chiefs Monday night thriller. The two teams combined for 105 points, the third most in NFL history, with the Rams winning 54-51. Between the two of them, the Rams and Chiefs gained over 1,000 yards, 827 of those coming through the air, and 174 on the ground. They combined for 144 plays, 7 turnovers, 7 punts, and 14 touchdowns. Zach, this could be a Super Bowl matchup, Super Bowl preview we saw yesterday.
A lot of people are hoping so. A lot of people are hoping so. It was a fun game to watch, to say the least, but it did drag on a little bit. If I'm being honest.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Started a little bit after 8, and I was looking at the clock saying, goodness, I need to get to bed.
Fair enough.
It was a fun game.
The crazy thing is that it was like considered one of Patrick Mahomes' like not better games.
He struggled. 4 turnovers didn't help him.
Yeah, but he still had a crazy day.
Definitely. I agree, and he's going to be one of the fun ones to watch. But that wraps up our current sports quick hit headlines. As we talk about that Monday Night Football game, a game that I'm not expecting maybe either team, maybe the total to break 50 points, we're just going to quickly touch on the Thanksgiving matchup before, Jack, you head home for your Thanksgiving break. Lions-Bears, again, this Thursday before we get Kyle Turk in the mix. Again, call in 517-355-9527. If you have any comments, I know we had a couple of callers yesterday that we couldn't get to. So, again, call in and we'll make sure to get you on today's show. The Lions-Bears, if you're a Lions fan and you're sitting there watching last Sunday's game, they go out and they win. And you're thinking, of course, it's going to be another middle round pick. They're going to miss out on the playoffs by another couple games. And they're going to be stuck in mediocrity for at least another year.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Seems like it. And for as much hate as Matthew Stafford has taken, he came out and played pretty well, I would say.
It was all right. Yep, I would say so.
He played all right. And again, with all the injuries that they're dealing with, not quite MSU level of injuries, I'll say, as far as the football team is concerned. But they do have a chance to, again, I don't know. I would love to hear from Lions fans to hear if they're actually rooting for or against the Lions this Thursday. Because
yeah, absolutely.
4-6, 4-7, and maybe if you win 5-6 somehow, you're just going to be, again, stuck in the middle. So it would be interesting to judge the Lions fans' kind of expectations going forward.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that 100%. You know what? I'd love to know where people are with Jim Bob Cooter. You know, the offense looked slightly better, I would say. Matt Stafford was getting the ball out a little bit quicker on Sunday. Led to a little bit more success for sure, as opposed to, you know, the last couple weeks with the Bears and the Vikings. They put some points up on the Bears, you know, towards the end of that game. But as far as I was concerned, that was just stat padding. So
yeah, and that's the nickname he's gotten, Stat Padford. And I mean, deservedly so. So it's going to be interesting. Again, that franchise is going to take criticism until they do start to win. And for some reason, you know, if you're born in Michigan, your parents just want to raise you a Lions fan.
Sure.
Just, it's what are you doing to your kids? Just just let them pick their own team and live their lives. Because, I mean, up until now, like, I don't even really consider myself a fan anymore.
No.
I'll watch my games. I'll watch their games and have to take my notes. And again, if you're doing this for a daily job, you have to watch their games, and that's enough of a punishment. But that's as much Lions talk as I'm going to get into today. Again,
that's fair enough.
If you really want to talk about them, we can preview the Lions game again tomorrow on Thanksgiving Eve. But I want to get to our special guest. Back-to-back days, we've had, you know, WDBM experts in the house, the head editor, football reporter for Impact Sports, the MSU student radio station, Kyle Turk, just joined us in studio. Kyle, how are you doing?
Zachary, it's been far too long since we've been back on the airwaves together.
It's been a while. Obviously, you know, Spartan Red Zone last year, and just get it out of the way. Spartan Red Zone, it's going to be online for people to listen to.
Right now, we actually did the early recording yesterday, moved it up obviously due to the holiday. You can go check it out right now, impact89fm.org/sports, where you can find most of our content. We've had basketball in the last couple days. A lot more play-by-play recently, too, 88.9 in the Lansing area during a select MSU sporting events.
It's a specialty if you're able to listen to MSU students during the regular season. And again, they will continue that work throughout the basketball season and into the spring. I just ran over from D'Antonio's press conference. He always seems to just show up late, but today was just a little bit later, about 11:45, usually scheduled for 11:30, ends up showing up and just kind of a little bit of a lax attitude. Obviously, Rutgers coming in on Saturday, favored by over almost four touchdowns, coming off the loss to Nebraska 9-6. It just felt like the attitude from him, I know it's Tuesday, but it was just like, yeah, another football game.
Well, and at this stage in the season, when they've faced the results that they've had to face up against, when they wake up on Sunday morning and read it back, and you think back to, what kind of questions am I going to get coming into Tuesday? And I don't think anyone wants to be there right now. And it's a week, kind of like a useless week, already bowl eligible, going up against an opponent that you ideally know that you're going to beat. Although they've played, Rutgers have a couple of pretty competitive games of recently. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to be there if I was him either.
But he did stay up there, answered questions, said he wasn't in a rush, and almost made me late for the show. He took as many questions as the media had, which honestly wasn't a ton because it is Rutgers coming in. Maybe the biggest news is Jack and I were talking about pre-show. Brandon Sauer just possibly getting a sixth year, D'Antonio said he thought it would be allowed, but when that's the biggest news, I think that, again, that speaks to the size of the game coming up. And again, we recapped the loss to Nebraska yesterday. Again, for the callers that did want to call in and talk about that, you can call in 517-355-9527. We'll make sure to get you in today. But your takeaways from that game, again, 9-6, all field goals and three trips to the red zone and no scores.
Oh, it was, you could blame almost no one for turning that game off. I mean, you guys, I listened yesterday, you guys covered most of it. I don't really think, as I mentioned on our podcast yesterday, I don't think there's any productive discussion to be had about really anyone on the roster at this point, given that the roster has been so decimated by injuries. The quarterback debate is a tough one to have, given that there are so many different circumstances involved in the play on the field. It can look great one week, and it can look, you know, like it did on Saturday the next. I think that you and I have kind of been in the same kind of step on, it's really injuries. And you can talk all you want about the talent they had coming back and the high expectations they had for this year. When you can't field the team that you want, you're not going to reach any of your goals.
And D'Antonio did say today, giving about as much of an injury update as he has,
saying Lewerke, if he'll play when he feels ready, which I don't know if that's the best route to take on this. I think just shut him down for at least this week, and if he has time to get ready for the bowl game, maybe think about playing him. But looking at the depth chart right now, it's, again, how they list co-starters, Brian Lewerke or Rocky Lombardi. Come Saturday, I don't see any positive starting Brian Lewerke.
I agree. That's not necessarily up for debate, especially in a game like this where conditions will not be great. Again, I'm presuming it's Michigan weather. I mean, what more can we say? It's I've been a proponent of starting Lewerke from a pure talent standpoint, knowing that I think Lewerke is a better quarterback than Lombardi, all things being equal. But the injury plays a part, and it's the throwing shoulder too, which is the main factor. I'd say go ahead, and it cannot be much worse condition-wise or performance-wise from MSU's receivers coming up on Saturday against Rutgers, or even from the pure point of Lombardi's passes looked solid on Saturday coming out of the hand. Mm-hmm. But by the time they ended up coming to the receivers, the wind, everything else factored in. It's wobbly. I'll stick with Lombardi for this week and maybe even for the bowl game as well.
And it's interesting because Lombardi did come out and say it's mechanical to a degree, his issues this past Saturday. And going for, like I said, I think he's the clear starter. I think they could trot out whoever they want at quarterback, honestly, and beat Rutgers. I know they've been competitive in a couple games, but the talent level just isn't the same. And I know, Jack, we were talking about how D'Antonio's talked about the injuries being a factor. Mm-hmm. And today, and he'll never come out and say, well, this was the reason why we lost. But he'll come out and say, well, you know, the losses that we have, you know, the past few games, and again, this is D'Antonio, I'm paraphrasing, but it's been wind, it's been snow, the weather has affected how they've played. And he's not going to make it as an excuse, but he said that as a factor. And at this point, I don't think fans want to hear that.
No, I'd agree with that 100%, because kind of like what we touched on yesterday, there is no excuse for a team with Michigan State's talent to lose to that Nebraska team they lost to on Saturday. I think Scott Frost is a fantastic coach, but he doesn't have his talent yet, in my mind. And I think Adrian Martinez is going to be a great quarterback for Nebraska. But again, here and now, he's a true freshman. One thing I actually wanted to ask Kyle, I wanted to know if this was even brought up in the press conference. Has there been any talk of what they're going to do with Josiah Scott for Saturday's game? Because if he plays on Saturday and then in the bowl game, he'll have played five games and he won't be eligible to redshirt this season.
The plan that I heard was sit Rutgers and then play the bowl game.
I think that was the initial preliminary talk. When D'Antonio talked about the season with a redshirt for Josiah Scott, LJ Scott, as it comes to their redshirts, I think always at the start of the year, he was factoring in that bowl game. And you can, when you're Michigan State, and you can sure factor in, given that they're already at that 7-win mark, that they were going to make a bowl game. And let's be honest, as we know, Rutgers, not exactly prime opposition.
Exactly.
So I would presume to see Josiah Scott is lifted on the depth chart. You've got, I'm pretty sure he's listed, but I would presume he does not play.
He's listed as the starter.
Yeah, that would be the right move in my mind.
Again,
the other side is Josh Butler still injured. They'd have to be working on a fourth-string guy like Trey Person at that point.
And, you know, Trey Person, sophomore, he's come in. He's had his struggles.
He's been up and down. I've actually liked his game at times this year. And then the inexperience also shows. It's the same way for me with a lot of the guys that MSU has kind of had to bring in due to injury is, you know, you see the good side and you see why they came to MSU and were recruited as a top level athlete in D1, but you also see mistakes, Person letting up the long touchdown to Donovan Peoples-Jones in the Michigan mm-hmm. game. It's the good with the bad, and all things considered, there's still a little bit to like about the youth that they've had to play this year.
And again, that was mentioned as well as the press conference. Despite the injuries, that just means more experience for the younger guys. And again, come next year, it kind of sounds like we were saying last year that youth that's getting experience will be able to build off of that come next year. But I think, again, when you look at the defense, it's just about as good as it can get in the country, maybe behind Michigan, maybe Alabama and Clemson. But you guys recorded early. I wanted to ask the panel, how many NFL talent caliber players do you think are on this defense? I would argue 5. I was going to set the over-under at 4.5.
You're saying right now, regardless of what year they are projected to NFL guys. You can presume the guys that have already been getting a little bit of love in Raekwon Williams and Justin Lane. You can count those guys. Kenny Willekes, well, the size is an issue.
He has to be.
He's definitely got the potential to be a late round guy.
Yeah, pure production standpoint,
yeah.
Right?
Josiah Scott is on track. Kari Willis is a Chris Fry level.
Yeah.
I think, you know, a good player, a strong leader. Is he going to be, does he have the athleticism and ability to play at that next level? Tough to say. And then in terms of other guys, it's tough. Antoine Simmons is kind of in that little mix of, well, progression could lead to good things down the road. It's still a very solid defense. I think number four in the nation, according to defensive S&P Plus. It's really a shame that they've had so many good performances squandered. They've been in the position, Joey, I also love to say, they've been in a position to win every single game based off of the defense alone.
And, again, I think Kari Willis would be borderline. I think he's shown glimpses. It's just, is that athletic ability enough?
Maybe closer than Chris Fry was.
Yeah.
Because there were definitely holes in Chris Fry's game, even in the college level.
And I think you've seen glimpses as well. Naquan Jones has gotten a little bit of love when he has been on the field.
Yeah, might be a wait and see because he's still got two very solid. Oh, and Mike Pounishuk.
Mike could
see a little bit of love next year. He'll have that senior year to kind of build. I mean, there's just that kind of, it's, Naquan Jones still has been good, but only in limited stretches, as
and,
you said.
And it's interesting, you know, after I was at the NFL Combine talking to some of those more talent evaluators, there's, and again, especially after last night's Monday Night Football game, a lot of them, you know, are saying it's interesting to see how that middle defensive tackle position, kind of like Snacks Harrison comes in for the Detroit Lions, if that's going to be devalued going into the future. And a couple of those guys are on this Michigan State football team. So while they have success here, maybe not necessarily at the next level. Again, MSU, 27-point favorite as of today. Over-under set at 37. Again, a Saturday, 4 p.m. on Fox. Just your expectations going into the game. I know it's Rutgers, but there's still things people can watch for.
We talked very little about this game on the podcast for obvious reasons. D'Antonio comes in 15 minutes late to the presser. It tells you how much their focus is on this week. It might even be tight for 2.5 quarters. You never know. The crowd might not being there might also play a factor, given it the holiday, plus weather, plus all the other extraneous factors. My joke prediction on the show was 5-0 MSU, because who knows if this team is going to end up in the end zone anytime soon. But I would expect a couple touchdowns, maybe a 24-3, 24-7, somewhere in there.
And I think that's reasonable. Over under set at 37, I think is pretty clear how Vegas values this game.
Is either team going to score 27 points?
Yeah,
or combined 27 points?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. And again, the bigger games I would assume is what you talked about on Spartan Red Zone, and there's a list of them. The biggest probably being where College Game Day will be in Columbus, Michigan, 3.5-point favorite going to the Shoe. Again, I mean, this game is possibly for a playoff spot.
Right, and it's not exactly 2-3 the way it was in 2016. Still, you get that feeling that it's going to be a classic. It does have that kind of feel, even though Michigan comes in this time. It feels like a role reversal from most of the seasons that have played out in the past, where Michigan comes in the better-looking team, the more confident team. And going on the road, it's tough because U of M has that mental block. Mm-hmm. And there have been teams more talented than – I think the 2016 team was more talented than the 2018 version. It's a debate to have.
For Michigan or Ohio State?
For Michigan.
You think 2016 was more talented than 2018?
Right.
Interesting.
It's a very fine line. I will say it's a very thin margin, but – it's just, no matter what this Michigan team does, and that's stretched back decade now, they have struggled going to Columbus and then also playing the Buckeyes in general. So I'm torn. I'm interested to hear what do you guys think about the whole dynamic of the rivalry heading into this one.
I think it's interesting you see Higdon come out. Obviously, he's an outspoken guy. We talked to him at Big Ten Media Days.
Wasn't that outspoken at Big Ten Media Days?
No, he wasn't, but he was definitely personable.
Right.
And when it comes to this game,
he got pushed into it, though.
He was led into it.
He was definitely led into it.
Definitely led into it. And I think when it comes to this rivalry, I think, like you said, it's set up to be one of those all-timers. I think we haven't seen Ohio State play anywhere near their level. We touched on that yesterday, Jack, the level that they could be playing at, their ceiling, if you will. Michigan, on the other hand, I think has been, again, very sneaky efficient on the offensive side of the ball. You know what the defense is going to bring, but are they going to be able to shut down Dwayne Haskins, who, again, had a very good day against Maryland? I like Michigan in this game. Again, I'll have my picks tomorrow on the show. But, Jack, you know, this is your last day on the show. What's your expectations for this game?
You know, my thoughts on this game are, if Michigan plays their best game, even in Columbus, if they give their A game on Saturday, I think they win by 10 to 13 points. I think if Nick Bosa were playing in this game, that could have huge ramifications, just because there's nobody in Michigan's program that can block Nick Bosa, let's face it. Very few guys in the entire country can stop that man. But, you know, Ohio State obviously has been banged up. They've been compromised. Their defense, to me, just looks like, it almost looks like it's a hangover from all the talent they've sent to the NFL in recent years. You know, they have young, talented corners in Damon Arnett and Sean Wade and Jeff Okuda, but they don't look like they're there yet to me. And, you know, what I've seen from Michigan this year, to your point, is I don't think Shea Patterson as a pocket passer is great, but I think he does what they need him to do. I think he's good when he's out on the edge. I think he's athletic. I think he's good with the zone read. I just think Michigan, although maybe not more talented than Ohio State, they come into this game healthier, certainly, with the Buckeyes missing Nick Bosa. And I think Jim Harbaugh finally breaks the streak and gets Michigan's first win in Columbus since 2000.
And that would, I mean, as much as people talk about a big program win, I think this one is, would definitely be up there.
Mark D'Antonio would definitely call it a program
win. I'm taking that from the head coach here in East Lansing. I'm assuming this game was in your Pick'em segment.
Yes,
on Farm Red Zone.
And, you know, there are two ways of looking at it. It's the on-field of Michigan comes in, all these things, healthier, looking overall eye test better. And then you think back, and it's been a long, long time since Michigan has come into Columbus and won the game, regardless of how good either team is heading in. I do think Michigan wins this game, finally gets that monkey off their back, only because Shea Patterson can do a little bit more to that Ohio State defense than Haskins can do to that Michigan defense. They're both very good players, and I don't think one of them is necessarily that much better than the other. But that Michigan defense is just a force to be reckoned with.
Here's one question I have for both of you, if you don't mind. If Michigan loses this game to Ohio State, does that undo all the nice things people have said about Jim Harbaugh this season? Because Wisconsin's not as good as people thought they were. Neither is Penn State. Neither is Michigan State.
If anything, it devalues the whole revenge tour.
Absolutely.
And that whole sideline, the off-the-field storyline from this entire season was all about, let's get Michigan right back on track. And a loss in this game, it's a tough loss to swallow. And nothing against Ohio State, but it just undoes all of that goodwill you picked
up. So you think so?
Oh, because you're right. Wisconsin, not that good. Michigan State, not that good.
Penn State. I know they're ranked highly. I don't think Penn State's the 14th best team in the nation.
I don't know if it's fair to say devalue, but it definitely is, like Kyle said, it ruins the revenge tour. I mean, it's the last stop. I mean, they'll have Northwestern and Indy.
And they've got the playoff right in their sights. It would be very Michigan to get to this point and somehow lose that game. And, I mean, do the fans deserve that is the real question.
It's a good question. Other big games that you guys maybe previewed or picked?
Apple Cup is a big deal. Washington State. A couple of good Friday night games. Oklahoma, West Virginia as well. I'm interested, curious, does Oklahoma get in somehow? I mean, what do we put the percent chance that it's going to take, I think, until conference championship weekend to decide any of that?
I think with West Virginia losing, that's going to be tough to help their resume. I mean, Texas would be a good win if they get there, but I give them like 5% to get in, and that's probably too high.
And it's just where I think it's a wait and see game for a lot of these last couple playoff spots. Really for the last one,
sure.
Until we get to that SEC title game, and until we get to that Big 12 title game.
And I think if you're one of the fans that want to see a bigger playoff, you're rooting for Georgia again in 2 weeks to beat Alabama. So two SEC
creates that debate.
Two SEC teams are in. And then you have possibly a Big Ten champ in Michigan.
Six feels perfect for this year.
Six feels perfect
for this year because you've got Georgia there. And does Georgia deserve to be out just because they lose to two very solid teams? And then it's the same question with Michigan. Even if they win that, imagine if Michigan wins out and then somehow ends up on the wrong side because Georgia wins.
And we weren't able to get to this yesterday, Jack. I just wanted to get your thoughts before we get Kyle out of here on the playoff.
I've got time. I'm going to keep talking.
I know you have class coming up. I just want to make sure you're good. So on the playoff, 6-8, or are you good with 4?
Well, you know what? The problem I've always loved 4. The problem I've had with 6, I would like 6 more than 8. The problem you have with 6 is at that point, you got to give two teams a first-round bye. And the problem is when you already have a month off going into the playoff, I don't think the bye is an asset anymore. I think it's actually a detriment. So that's kind of always been my issue with 6 teams because, you know, every team has a month off. If you have a first-round bye on top of that, you're going to come into your next game rusty. So that's kind of always what... That's kind of always been why I've been against 6. As a college football fan, I like where you're at with 6, but that's kind of always been my issue. No, I think 4 is fantastic.
I think the counter argument to that is that it would kind of change, well, it would fundamentally change the whole New Year's 6 structure. And you wouldn't see a hard and fast rule to, we have to play these games at this certain time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think things would get moved up. I think maybe... It could even move some lesser bowls out of the way, move those up even further. And that I see where you're going with that. It's just that I believe moving to 6, it allows you to do a lot of different things with where the game gets played. You could even have home site games in some form.
Oh, that'd be ideal, absolutely.
And I don't know if the money is too much on the flip side to agree with moving to home sites. But it's still, there are a lot of different things you can do with moving to 6.
And again, there's always going to be the UCF argument. I think they're a top 10 football team, but are they deserving to get into even a top 6?
Love UCF. You love UCF. I love UCF. I wish there was a way to make it happen this year, but I'd say there are 4 teams better than UCF this year, at least.
I would agree. But when it gets to that 6 number, I think, again, that's where it gets interesting. And just as we talked about yesterday with the Dave Warner and the offensive staff, I don't know if there's going to be change there, and I don't think there will be change with the college football playoff. And again, there's 41 bowl games if you include the championship, so over half of the FBS teams are getting in to the postseason, quote-unquote. I would be a proponent or a supporter of a 16 playoff. I just don't know if it's going to happen. Your last thoughts, again, Kyle Turk joining us, WDBM football expert, quote-unquote.
Sports editor, too.
Sports editor, head editor. Your last thoughts again. Is there anything specific that fans can be watching for in MSU, Rutgers, or in any of these games?
Watching for where this team ends up come December or January. I mean, say what you want, but there is a little bit of weather related things on the line. Florida, California could be as far north as New York, maybe.
I don't know if they would like that. But.
No. I'm saying, well, no, I wouldn't like that. It'd be pretty cold out there in New York come New Year's Eve. But I don't know. I mean, Florida. There's a lot of options. It looks like primarily Florida is where they should end up. Hopefully, not a Holiday Bowl redux.
They were hoping for Holiday Bowl at some point.
Yeah, but at this point, I think you've got the Gators, you've got the Outbacks, you've got the Citruses. They're still a little bit to play for if you're MSU.
San Diego, you have to give it credit for, though. It's a nice city.
We enjoyed ourselves.
Last time we'll be able to get you two in studio before this game. I know picking straight up would be a little too easy, so 27-point favorite MSU. Before we go to our first break, Jack, we'll start with you. If you want to give a score, you can, but other than that, does MSU cover, and what are you expecting?
No, I don't think MSU covers because I don't think MSU is going to score 28 points, unfortunately. I know they've looked impressive against Rutgers the last couple of years, you know, obviously scoring 49 even in the disaster of a season, the 3-9 year, and 40 last season as well in this game. But no, to me, I think it's, you know, you're going to see a score pretty similar to the Maryland game. I think the offense will move the ball well, but I think they'll probably turn it over in the red zone just probably by virtue of a fumble at some point because they seem to do that a lot in the red zone this year. So, no, I don't have them covering the spread. I think they'll win comfortably, but I think Spartan fans, again, will be frustrated with the offensive output. But I don't think this game will ever be in question.
We've seen worse or similarly bad offenses put up a plenty of points against Rutgers. I don't think they cover, but would I be surprised with a 42-7 much like we saw last year? Probably not.
And again, for the fans that are saying, you know, they hope MSU loses and that'll force a change.
I have not heard that yet.
I've heard a few upset fans that say, well, maybe that will be a catalyst for some change. I don't even think that.
I'm pro new voice in the offensive room.
New ideas, I think, would be
I don't know if firing Dave Warner is the end-all, be-all either way. I'm just going to say I'm pro new voice.
Pro new voice. You can listen to Kyle Turk's voice, as well as Joey Ellis, and the entire Spartan Red Zone cast on Spartan Red Zone.
3:30 pregame show for Saturday's game as well, 88.9 in the Lansing area.
And I'm assuming
Andy Shmura
will be on that call. And again, all of their content on impact89fm.org/sports. They'll be live for the game as well. So if the broadcast isn't suiting your fancy and you're in the Lansing area, listen to some student journalists. That's Kyle Turk for WDBM. Again, back-to-back days, we've had some WDBM experts in the house.
Love it.
Thanks for joining us. We're going to go to our first break here. Again, we're going to come back and talk just a little bit more and wrap a bow on the MSU football discussion before we get in. It's a little bit more basketball talk again. MSU getting ready to take on UCLA in Las Vegas. But we're going to take our first break and we'll be back after this. And a little bit more joyous music as we still, again, continue to wrap up this MSU football discussion. And one of the biggest things, again, I think we left out and I think a lot of people are leaving out, we don't know what's going on in that coaching room. Is Dave Warner making all these decisions or is D'Antonio have his hand in this? Because that's a big point I think not many people are able to actually have an answer on. And again, D'Antonio's, for some people, has earned the right to be able to keep the staff around. And if he's making the decisions, then that's on him. And maybe that's the reason Dave Warner is still around and Jim Bowman and that entire offensive staff. Because as Kyle mentioned, it just, not necessarily play calling at least, but some more ideas, you know, innovation, evolution, ingenuity, something, any of those descriptors I think would be a positive in the offensive room.
Sure. Does the relationship between Dave Warner and Mark D'Antonio seem more fractious to you than in years past? Because coming out of the Ohio State game, you know, Warner was obviously asked, why didn't Lombardi start this game? And to which his response was, talk to Coach D about that one. And, you know, kind of from what I've heard from people close to the program is Warner also wanted Lombardi to start the Michigan game, to which mm-hmm. D'Antonio said, no, not in a rivalry game. Lewerke's got to get the start in this one. So do you think the relationship's more fractious?
Yeah, I think that's a good question because, as you've mentioned, like Dave Warner, every post game, win or loss, home games, he'll come out before Mark D'Antonio. And given the time between the end of the game and when he's there, which is less than 10 to 15 minutes after the game, they don't really have time to get their stories together.
Mm-hmm.
And that first game, the Michigan game, I should say, when there was a little bit of controversy, there was different stories about Brian Lewerke, whether he was healthy or not. Dave Warner coming out and saying, yeah, he practiced the whole week. It was fine. And D'Antonio coming up less than 10 minutes later and saying, yeah, he was out until Thursday. He didn't even practice. So I think it started with that. And I think to your point, I think their relationship has at least been strained, you know, with some of the decisions they've made. And again, D'Antonio, I've heard this question asked, has he earned the right to be able to be, you know, the main guy, even in offensive decisions? Because, you know, he's focused on the defense, and he's even admitted he's still learning the offensive game.
Sure.
So when it comes to that, I think the relationship is strained. I think that's a good question from you, Jack, and it's going to be interesting to see, again, what happens against Rutgers, because Brian Lewerke and Rocky Lombardi are listed as co-starters right now, and there was not a definite answer from D'Antonio who will be behind center.
That would be wild to me if Brian Lewerke started on Saturday. I don't think he will. But you know what, to me, with where I'm at with it, is the only way I will be content, as obviously I'm a Spartan journalist, but I'm also a fan. I separate the two, and I haven't had the privilege of covering Michigan State yet, so I haven't had to be too objective on this, I guess. But where I'm at with it is the only way I think fans could be content would be to see Jim Bowman and Dave Warner both be fired and be replaced by someone from outside the program. But I don't think we'll see that happen. But for me, there's no way I would get season tickets as a student next year if we didn't see sweeping changes.
And a lot of people, again, are relating, you know, kind of the inverse of this to Oklahoma firing their defensive coordinator in the middle of the season, mm-hmm. praising Lincoln Riley, but their defense is still bad.
Right.
So when you think about that from the MSU side of the ball, or MSU offense, I should say, if you bring in someone new or if you fire Dave Warner, there's still injuries on this team. Rocky Lombardi does seem to have his limitations, as we've seen. Would that even make a change, especially in the middle of the season?
No, not at this point. It would need to be in the offseason. Just one question for you, a little bit off topic here, but regarding Lincoln Riley. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's any chance he goes to the Cleveland Browns?
I would like to see it. I don't know if he does. It would be interesting to see if, you know, their season affects it, because Kyler Murray is gone after this year.
Right.
So if he doesn't think he has a quarterback in that quarterback room, I wouldn't be surprised.
Link back up with Baker Mayfield.
I think that would be fun. Again, defensively, it's still in question. I mean, but he could bring in his own defensive coordinator.
Sure. He could do a little bit of what Jim Harbaugh does in Michigan, where he kind of divests himself from the defensive side of the ball.
And completely give it away. And I think, to a degree, that's what Mark D'Antonio should do for offense. But mm-hmm. I think it would be – I mean, I would like to see Lincoln Riley in the NFL.
You know, I think that would be the Browns' ideal scenario. I don't know if he has any interest in moving to the NFL, but that would be interesting to follow.
He's kind of pushed it off so far. Obviously, mm-hmm. he's not going to talk about it until the end of the season. But he's another one of those guys, again, that not a lot of people are talking about, from that Mike Leach tree. One of the, you know, the
head, he was a Leach guy?
Yeah, assistant coach. I don't want to say when, but back
so
in the
probably
day,
at Tech.
At Texas Tech. I don't remember the year, but he was there. Cliff Kingsbury, Dana Holgorsen. A lot of the offensive, you know, geniuses have come under Mike Leach. And when you look at,
wacky offense.
Wacky is a word for it, his wacky personality. But he just continues to pump out quarterbacks and guys that eventually become head coaches. I mean, that might be a little bit of coincidence, but it's something to note. And again, not to look back on last year, because I know Washington State was dealing with their own injuries in that Holiday Bowl game, but that Michigan State defense has remained the same. Where has that offense been? And it just goes back to the same discussion. I don't want to get back into it too much more. The last really note I had looking at this Michigan State team as we, again, wrap up this discussion, some of these numbers, you know, I saw on social media. The rest I had to research. And you look at offense versus defense and just strictly points per game. That's a very basic stat. Everyone seems to agree. You know, it affects the game. It affects you whether you win or you lose. And you look at the Michigan State defense, only two games, that was Central Michigan and Northwestern, did they allow more than their average. And those two teams both have relatively poor defenses, or excuse me, offenses. And both of them, if you look at those game tapes, had their fair share of, I don't want to say given points, but definitely
big plays and whatnot.
Big plays and help from special teams and penalties. But those are the only two games out of their 11 games so far this season. And I wanted to look at the offense just for fun. Obviously, Utah State, they score 38 points. They're averaging 22 given up. They have lesser opponents, and that was the first game of the season. So I kind of write that one off. And you look at the remainder of the 10 games, seven of them has Michigan State scored below the season average, at or below the season average of those respective teams. And three of them are single digits. It's Michigan, Ohio State, and Nebraska, 13 points to Arizona State. And if that isn't, I don't want to, beat a dead horse here, but what do you need to see from Michigan State offensively to say, hey, just make a change?
Sure.
Just make a change at this point.
And you know what? I guess just thinking about this right now is, you know, in many ways, this offense is even more damning than the 3-9 season, just because, you know, prior to his injury, you had a quarterback this season. You had a quarterback in Brian Lewerke coming off a great season last year. And, you know, you go to Arizona State, his home state, just 20 minutes away from his high school, mm-hmm. and you score 13 points. You know, at least you could make the argument in the 2016 season that, you know, you're coming off losing one of the greatest senior classes of all time. You're losing the greatest quarterback in school history. You know, you're losing a great number one receiver in Aaron Burbridge. So, I mean, if you want to sell me that, you know, you're going to struggle offensively just because you're going to be in a transition year from a quarterback standpoint and maybe from an offensive talent standpoint, maybe I could buy that. But there was no excuse for this coming into the season, just because what Brian Lewerke accomplished last season, what Felton Davis had accomplished last season, what this entire offensive cast had accomplished leading up to this year.
And I misspoke. It's eight out of the last 10 games they've scored at or underneath the average the defense, the opposing defense is giving up. Penn State was right at 21, but the rest, I mean, and those are a couple of those games are games that you expected Michigan State to win. And maybe it's just speaking again from covering this team, but when, you know, D'Antonio or the coaches get frustrated when, you know, the quote-unquote media comes out and writes stories and, you know, speculates, that's all they can really do when he won't talk about injuries and it's all murky waters and the play calling is fine and it's the same rhetoric over and over that, again, as Al mentioned a couple weeks ago, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And so far, I mean, look at the 11 games, the stats I just gave you. I would dive into more deeper analytics, but you really probably don't want to hear that because you watch the games. And the eye test tells you you just need a change. And the one interesting stat, and again, Chris Olari brought it up, or the Detroit Free Press in the press conference today, Michigan State's being outscored 94-42 in the fourth quarter. Obviously, a few of those coming via turnover and, you know, good field position, but that right there is just it's rough. It's not good, and it's really inexcusable for, you know, a team like you said when you play in Nebraska, Purdue, and they end up winning against Purdue. But that could have been a bigger game. So, again, your last thoughts. I know we've kind of ragged on everything that we can on MSU football, but I think it needs to be talked about. And again, 517-355-9527 if you want to call in. Your last thoughts about MSU football.
Well, sure, it makes sense when you think about it, the idea that they've been outscored so badly in the fourth quarter, because when you run an archaic vanilla scheme in the first place and a team has already seen it for three quarters, you know, at that point, heading into the fourth quarter of a game, it would make sense that you don't allow a whole lot. You know, it's not like I don't think Michigan State runs a particularly complex offense. I mean, teams haven't had much trouble stopping them, and, you know, this year or in years past. I mean, there are only so many jet sweeps you can run to the short side of the field before teams pick up on what you're going to do. So, I mean, it doesn't shock me at all. That's a hell of a stat from Solari right there. But, you know, the idea that they've been outscored 94-42 in the fourth quarter, you know, it's kind of twofold. One is that this defense, as great as they've been, they've gotten worn down a couple games just because, you know, the offense hasn't put together very many long drives. The defense doesn't get a whole lot of breaks in some of these games. I mean, that's what you saw against Michigan. It's kind of what you saw against Ohio State. Obviously, they had the wacky defensive touchdown they allowed in their own end zone as well. But, you know, it makes sense when you think about it just from a fatigue standpoint, just because, you know, the defense doesn't get enough rest. And again, you know, teams have seen this offense for three quarters going into the fourth quarter, and they weren't any great shakes then, so it would make sense that they wouldn't give up many points towards the end of the game either.
And the one thing you mentioned there, again, if you've watched any of Michigan State football, how many times do you need to run any type of stretch play to the short side of the field? It's not going to be successful. And again, that's just what people can see watching the games. That's what kind of worries me about Michigan State football, because there's things that we can see just watching the games and talking to some of the players and coaches. What's going on behind those closed doors? Is there that? I mean, they'll say there's no frustration between the offense and the defense, but when you're an elite defense that puts, you know, limits Nebraska to 9 points and your offense scores six, you can't tell me that you're not at least a little off frustrated if you're a defensive player.
No, absolutely. And you know what? It might go even deeper than that. It might be frustrating if you're an offensive player as well, just because I think these guys love playing for Mark D'Antonio. But I mean, would it really shock you at the end of the day if some of these guys on offense just think they have a minor league offensive coordinator?
And again, that's been brought up. I don't know if we've really touched on that, but there's times where the offense just comes on the field with little to no energy. They look like they don't think they have a chance because of the plays that are being called. So, again, 517-355-9527. If you want to call in and talk about football, basketball, Thanksgiving, whatever you want, we're here for you. Again, with 10 minutes left in the show, we're going to hit our second break. We're going to come back and hear from Tom Izzo previewing their matchup against UCLA. And as I mentioned, we're going to hear from Tom Izzo here. He previewed this upcoming matchup against UCLA on Thursday. I was there at practice yesterday to be able to talk to him, and some of the players were going to have audio from the players, as well as Ryan Cole, Smart Sports Network, and WDBM to come in and talk about that matchup. But as I said, I'm not going to wait any longer. I'll let you hear the man of the hour, if you will, Tom Izzo.
What's your take on UCLA? How much do you know about?
Well, I know a lot more than I knew a day ago, but God, these teams we're playing now are huge. My biggest concern is size, you know, a little bit of foul trouble and that hooking and all that stuff. But they play 3 or 4, you know, they're 7'1", 6'10", 6'9". They got 3 other 6'8", 9 guys. Carolina's got, I think, 8 of them, 6'8" and bigger. So size is an issue, but they got to cover us too. You know, I think they got good guards. Some of them are young. The Wilkes kid we recruited a little bit is probably their best talented player, although the Brown kid inside is 7'1", and he's good. He can do some things. I mean, he's playing a lot of minutes for him right now, so we're going to have to wear him down too and put Nick in a position. But I think it's going to be size. That'll be a big part of this issue. They pressure a little bit. They run pretty good like we do, so turnovers will be important. And I mean, they go 8-9 deep, but can go 10-11 if they just got to throw some guys at Nick and get some fouls in there.
When you get young guys too, the chance to go back to back, that's going to be something that I would take.
Yeah, you know, this whole, I mean, this is going to be, I think, arguably one of the toughest 6-game stretches that I've ever had. I mean, there's nobody in between. There's no, there's one home game, you know, so we're trying to look at it one game at a time, but we're also trying to be aware that, you know, we've got a lot of games here coming up and they're all tough. And I don't know. I'm hoping that's why they came here. Once in a while, you bite off more than you can chew. I don't know what that'll be. It's been a little harder, as I told you, the last year or two in scheduling because of this change of the Big Ten all of a sudden, what they do, and putting those two games early, and just different issues that we have. And so many of these games are not where we can make a decision. They're either a tournament or the Big Ten tournament, they're the Tournament of Champions. So, you know, it is what it is, but I look at it as exciting. I mean, we got an opportunity here to really find out where we are a little bit. Win or lose, we got a chance to find out where we are. And I think the young guys, it's going to be a challenge for them. I mean, that has been a difficult a little bit right now. We're trying to figure out which guys can play. We think we got 7 or 8 men in the playing group, and then some of those freshmen are going to have to play.
Tom, you always put value to tournaments, even the early season tournaments, and winning and what you get out of that. I'm sure that's still a high priority, even though you're trying to figure out rotation again still.
It is, and that's the juggling act. It is a very high priority. I think you got to learn how to win championships if you're going to be a champion, and that's kind of what I'm looking at right now. How can we do a better job of in the future what we can do? But for right now, it's, you know, there's times that I want to play a guy like Marcus, and there's times that I think because of the body and the weight, it's going to be harder to play him, you know, and then you kind of, do you put a Kithier in? Do you put a Foster in there? Do you put a McQuaid at the point some? You know, those are the things that the next 2 days we're going to try to really take a look at. We've looked at our film. You know, it's just funny because we're playing two of the biggest teams we'll probably play all year, maybe all three of them. Texas got some size, too. They're a little more athletic and quick, press a little bit more. But all three of these guys have more size than us, and two of them have enormous size.
Moses Brown is their leading scorer, rebounder. He is big, like you mentioned. So how can you use the Kansas game as maybe a comparison to him?
Yeah, that's a good point. And he plays a little bit like him. He was 7'1", 285. This guy's 7'1", 245. So a little more human to cover. Still a lot of weight and a lot of bulk. This kid is more agile around the basket, but neither one of them shoot it good from the perimeter. So hopefully we're going to do a little bit better job of not letting the ball go in, and a little better job of once the ball goes in, getting some help from other people. We did a poor job, solely my fault, against Kansas. We just did not do a good enough job. We're going to try to do a little bit better job in this game. It's a good three-point shooting team, not a great three-point shooting team. We can't let happen what happened in that Kansas game happen again. So hopefully it's a good learning experience. We're going to try to play them a little bit more like we played Gonzaga, which was a little more solid, got a little more help from our guards, and worked out.
And that was head coach Tom Izzo just giving you a brief preview of the UCLA matchup again. That six-game stretch that he mentions, if they were to win that game, they would face the winner of North Carolina, Texas. Obviously, they lose, they'll face the loser of that game. And one of the things that he did mention again after that kind of opening stretch of his press availability, that's less than a 20-hour time span between that game and then the game they will play Friday. So it's a tough tournament, obviously, out in Las Vegas to be able to come back from. And then they travel to Louisville, Rutgers, Iowa, and then going down to Gainesville. That's the six-game stretch that he's talking about. And it's going to test, to a degree, a team that's still, unproven.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that 20-hour turnaround any shorter than the PK-80 last season was, though?
Off the top of my head, I would say no.
Yeah.
Either way, that's, like he said, those are some big teams that
sure.
They'll have to match up. Moses Brown obviously being the first one out of UCLA. 7-1, 245. I mean, the guy can just play.
Sure.
He can just play. And he's going to be matched up against Nick Ward. And as we were kind of touching on before coming back on air here, Jack, if Nick Ward gets into foul trouble, who's going to match up against him?
I mean, from a size standpoint, you might want Bingham on him more often anyways, just because, Nick Ward's a good defender when he's not in foul trouble, but he's 6'9". I mean, Marcus Bingham at least is 6'11", almost 6'11". I mean, he'd only be given about an inch and a half in that matchup, whereas Nick Ward would be given a little more. So it's going to be interesting to see what Tom Izzo does in that matchup.
And he's been criticized a little bit for his lineups. Again, it will be very interesting to see who he trots out there. If Nick Ward gets into foul trouble, I wouldn't be surprised if you see an Isaac Haas, Kenny Goins type situation with Goins having to guard him, and he does have the experience. And a quote I'll have tomorrow on tomorrow's Current Sports, Kenny Goins said he feels like a grandpa on this team watching the freshman shoot around.
I like that, but
Jack, thanks for coming in these 2 days. It's been a blast.
Yeah, man, have a great Thanksgiving. We'll see you next week. All right,
and Al officially in Florida. I wish he could just send some sun up here. Frozen tundra of Michigan. I will be treacherous those paths as well as Alec Rio to bring you Wednesday